So I'm Dr. Mikkola Benson. I'm a sociologist from Goldsmiths, and I'm currently working on a project called Brexpats, which is all about what happens to the British migrants who live in Europe at a time of Brexit. So what's going to happen to them? And so this podcast series, Brexit Brits Abroad, is all about looking at that population and thinking about what the key issues are that affect them as Brexit unfolds. So what we're hoping to do through the series is to provide advice that might be helpful in the anticipation and management of potential consequences. But we're also going to start by doing a little bit of myth busting. In this episode, I talked to Dr. Sue Collard from the University of Sussex about the British abroad and their rights to vote in national elections in the United Kingdom. This is an issue that's become particularly topical in light of the recent European Union referendum, but also is of significance in thinking about the general election 2017. I started out by asking Sue why we should even care about whether the British abroad have the right to vote.
There's quite an important normative debate to be had about the question of why they should have the right to vote. And there are some people put forward arguments like, well, why should they? They don't pay taxes, do they? But actually, some do. So if you have a pension from local government, like a policeman or something like that, then you actually pay your taxes in the UK, as I understand it. So the tax argument isn't a very straightforward one. There are other arguments about whether or not you are affected by the policies made by the government that you elect. So if you're living abroad, you're much less affected by policies than if you're living in the UK. The problem with that argument is that policies about pensions are made by governments, and that directly affects pensioners, for example. And we know that British governments have traditionally been quite punitive towards expatriates. So they're now tied up into EU legislation, which means that they have to index link them. But there are some countries where, I think Canada is one, for example, where their pensions are not index linked. So over time, your pension just disappears into nothingness. And so
it can be devalued.
Exactly, yes. So the sort of argument about being affected by policies or not works for quite a lot of policy areas, but actually there are many policy areas which expats can say they are affected by. Plus, they will also argue that they have families in the UK and they're thinking about their children and grandchildren and that the policies made by British governments matter to them.
So what do you think the history is to, how would you outline the history to this issue? I mean, it's been ongoing for a long time, hasn't
it? Well, yes, but until the 1980s, there was no vote for overseas citizens at all. And it really started in the context of the EU when we joined the then common market. People began to realise that people who went to work in the institutions in the EU were being deprived of their voting rights. And this kind of debate, you know, took off quite slowly. But, you know, after time, the government of the time, it was under Margaret Thatcher, decided that it wasn't fair that these people shouldn't have voting rights. So in 1985, they introduced a bill. And at the time, they weren't sure about how it would work. And I think it was a 5-year temporary period. And it would then be kind of reevaluated, if you like. So that was the context. It was the common market. It wasn't people living outside, you know, in Australia or New Zealand. I think there was a sense in which, and I certainly see this, that you know, emigration to distant Anglophone countries is different to mobility, what we now call, you know, mobility within the EU. So that's where it kind of all started. But then it did become a bit politicised. So there were various debates and various attempts to increase or reduce the time limit, and it now stands at 15 years. And the 15 years, a lot of people who feel disenfranchised, so that's a totally random figure, which is true, it is. But at the time it was justified as being, well, 15 years is about the time. When you've been somewhere for 15 years, you've kind of a bit disconnected and you're probably not going to come back. So that's where 15 years came from. But of course, in today's world, with internet, with cheap flights, you know, people know exactly what's going on as it happens in the UK. They can follow UK news. It's very different. So, you know, the idea of 15 years suddenly begins to seem even more kind of random. And why 15, not anything else?
So the current regulation around this is that after you've lived outside of the UK for 15 years, you lose your right to vote in national elections. Yes. That's the rule.
Yes, nobody can vote in local elections, which makes sense because you're not local, but national elections. Yes.
So this is the right to vote in national elections.
Yes.
So I suppose a kind of related question to that is the UK different to other countries in this respect?
Well, there are other countries that put a time limit. So Germany has a 25-year time limit. Denmark has 2 years. And in fact, an additional constraint is that you're supposed to demonstrate that you will be coming back after those 2 years. Ireland has zero. But then other countries like France and Italy have voting rights for life.
So why might states choose to enfranchise overseas voters? Why would a state want their overseas voters?
Right. So this is different countries have different states across the world. So if you look at, you know, from a more global perspective, you have countries where they have a lot of emigration and the workers are sending back remittances, so that it's very important for the economy. So they want to kind of involve their citizens in the whole process of sending, you know, belonging to the mother country. In the case of Turkey, now it's a very interesting case because I would have assumed that Turks abroad would be more sort of secularized and more westernized, and that Erdogan would not have wanted them to vote in this referendum that we had recently. But in fact, it seems to be the opposite. And there was quite a strong vote. And in that case, it was because he knew that the Turks abroad actually supported his proposals for all sorts of reasons, which are not appropriate to talk about here. But there is not really a pattern. There isn't, you know, different states have different reasons at different times. So that nobody's really, and all the people working on this have come up with a kind of hard and fast set of rules. But political interest is one that comes up quite often, that states think that it's in their interest to do that. So you might say that Berlusconi for Italy and Sarkozy in France made changes to the legislation on overseas voting rights for partisan reasons. And in fact, in both of those cases, it backfired on them and they didn't get the result that they were hoping for. Having said that, France and Italy have a very different sense of citizenship. So they give voting rights for life. It was just the question of how they in the case of Italy, how they exercised those voting rights, whether you could vote from abroad or whether you had to go back to Italy. So there's no kind of uniform pattern as to why states do that. But certainly in the context of citizenship, states which have strong identities of citizenship, like France and Italy, they think it's just part of being a citizen, voting rights. It's just, you know, something that you should have.
Yeah.
Whereas we have a kind of very thin sense of citizenship in the UK, which really is because of our history of empire. And we have very sort of confused, complicated definitions of citizenship. There are, I think it's 6 categories of citizenship, British citizenship.
And voting interplays with those in various
ways. Yes, there's only one category where you actually have overseas voting rights.
So the kind of images that we had yesterday during the French election of these French people queuing up outside a polling station in South Kensington, we're not likely to be seeing that anytime soon.
No. And also because the French don't use postal voting. So they have to go to a polling station. And there were 2 in London, 1 at Wembley, 1 at the consulate, whereas the UK uses postal votes, which the French don't like to do because they fear fraud. We use it in the UK, though there are all sorts of problems with the implementation of that because of the very tight electoral calendar. it's very difficult to get ballot papers sent out and sent back again within the timescale.
But it's also got something, I believe, to do with how the electoral system's organised in the UK, contra how it's organised in France. We don't have overseas voting territories like they have here.
So that's different. That's for the legislative elections. Yeah. Those constituencies work for the legislative elections, and they were brought in last election, 2012. Before that, they didn't have that. That was new. That was what Sarkozy brought in. So what they, since 19, well, the first presidential election where they could vote from abroad was 1981. They've always been able to go back to France and vote, like Italians. But the idea of being able to vote from abroad, the first big election was the 1981 presidential election. And the idea of voting abroad was largely facilitated by the fact that when direct elections came into the European Parliament, states began to realise that they were going to have to make it possible for their citizens to vote in those elections. So some countries, like France, decided to use its embassies and consulates as polling stations.
And Britain did not.
We did not.
So why would it be so difficult for Britain to change its rules around overseas voters?
Okay, so first of all, there are all those normative arguments about why should they vote if they've jumped ship? They don't pay taxes, or all those sorts of things. And there's quite a negative attitude in this country towards voting rights for expats. And I think a lot of it seems to boil down to jealousy. Well, you know, if they've chosen to go and, you know, live on the Spanish coast with their swimming pools, why should they have a vote, you know, right to vote? They don't live here in this horrible weather. So there's a bit of that. So there's all the normative debate. Then there is the fact that it is politically contentious, and different parties have got different views about that. But so within Parliament, the debate is always going to be tense and quite conflictual. But thirdly, in terms of implementation, we're seeing now the Cabinet Office has been working on all the sort of complexities of implementation of extending voting rights beyond 15 years, because the David Cameron's government said it was going to get rid of the 15-year rule and offer votes for life. So the thing is that with potentially, they're working on about potentially 3 million people being able to register to vote, because our voting system works by registration in your previous constituency, the burden falls on the local authorities. And having been to their annual conference this year, I can tell you that this is a nightmare for them, overseas voting. So they've got to try and ascertain ways that people were actually registered there. Electoral authorities only have to keep the register for 15 years. So, and I know for a fact that many actually keep them, even though by law they don't have to. Some authorities will be able to just go into their archive room and dig out the old registers to see whether people did indeed live where they say they did. Others won't be able to do that. But the Cabinet Office has decided, because of that, that they'll need to prove residence in some way. So it's quite tricky when you start thinking about how are we going to do all this. And then there's the question of the national insurance number. Some people won't have a national insurance number. So there are all sorts of complexities about the actual registration process and how that will be implemented. So it's not a straightforward
The difference between
question.
Principle and practice.
Yes.
And working with their pre-existing structures.
And that's
structures.
Why, they couldn't do it for the referendum, because it would have taken far too long. I mean, the Cabinet Office, I know, have been working on this for really quite some time, and they're not finished with it yet. So there's no way they could have turned it around, except that the referendum was a bit different because it was a referendum. So they could have created a sort of virtual constituency and just, not bothered with all the local registration.
So I suppose in some ways it's perhaps unsurprising that the EU referendum and the fact that certainly some of the British migrants who live in Europe found themselves in a position where they were unable to vote. So it's perhaps unsurprising then that this then became a live issue again. I mean, it's been live for a while, but it's suddenly got a new lease of life, this issue around the right to vote for life.
Yeah, I mean, it took on that lease of life, particularly around the referendum, because what was at stake was so important. especially for people living in the EU. It wasn't just their voting rights, it was their whole citizenship, EU citizenship rights. So this was very, very important for them. And they couldn't understand why the government couldn't make it possible for them to vote, having said they would. And, you know, there was a case that went through the courts to try and get the government to implement that, which failed. So we have this bizarre situation where the government legal services are arguing something which was opposite to what they'd politically said in their manifesto. So they were just kind of saying, yes, but not now. Mm. And the not now reasons are easy to understand, but when you're being disenfranchised from your votes in a way that is potentially really, really important, then it's easy to see why those people were very angry.
So going forwards, we're obviously heading into a general election. And I suppose, you know, the story to take away from this is it's not the case that all British migrants are in a situation where they're disenfranchised. So those people who have been living abroad for less than 15 years, what do they need to do right now?
Well, they need to, if they were registered last year for the referendum, and we know that now that, you know, there was a huge increase in the number of registrations to 265,000 odd for the referendum, and that was up from about 105,000 for the 2015 election. So huge increase. So we know that there was a really big level of interest. Those people who were registered need to re-register. Annual registration in the UK, you have to re-register every year. Now, the local authorities should be sending out those documents, but apparently a lot of people haven't responded. And presumably that's because they thought, well, there isn't going to be an election this year, so let's not bother. But now that there is going to be an election, they need to register or renew their registration and check that they've renewed it before the 22nd of May, which is the cutoff point. And it's slightly worrying because it appears that local authorities have already started the process of sending out polling cards and ballot papers to people who actually have not yet re-registered. And if they don't register between now and the 1st of June, even if they receive their ballot papers and polling and send them back, they will just be made null and void when they arrive in the electoral authority. So people will think they've voted, but their votes won't count.
And they'll think they're registered, but they won't be. Yes. So the takeaway message is to get yourself registered and check as soon
now,
as possible.
Now, I know perfectly well that all the local authorities will be saying, oh, don't say that because we'll be, you know, we'll be snowed under with phone calls and things, which is what happened in the referendum. But to be honest, if you want to make sure that your registration has been renewed since last year, then you have to check with your local authority.
Thank you very much, Sue. That's been fascinating. So in a kind of closing, you know, it's clear that this is a perennial issue. It links to citizenship, the right to vote. And going forwards, what we're saying here is that, you know, actually the electoral system's changed in the UK as well. Mm. Please get out there, register if you have the right to vote. Before the 22nd of May.
Yes, because you can now register online. You don't have to do all the procedures that you had to do before, but you can't vote online. Some people think that because they've registered online, that's it, but that's only the first part of the process.
Absolutely.
So people who haven't yet registered at all, who want to register for the first time, need to go online on the About My Vote site and register for the first time, and then they'll get the relevant papers sent to them.
Sue, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
To find out more about the issues we've been discussing today, follow our Twitter feed at BrexpatsEU and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And I'll see you in the next episode.